Hello, welcome to the Grace Hour. My name is Pastor Justin Schaller, and happy to join you today for this special edition of the Character of God. I've been given the task to open this special session up on the character of God, and I'm going to do that today to the best of my ability, and just pray that God can just minister to us through this. But this is a theme, and I would say a doctrine that runs throughout the entirety of the Bible. And I want to just bring out 2 points today, talking about the character of God. And the way that I'm going to do it is I'm just going to go through just a few different places and passages in the Old Testament, and then finish off in the New Testament to talk about it. But I just want to start off to just kind of lay the groundwork of how this is going to be laid out, just with a little story. When I was in high school, and I'm sure many of you can identify with this, but when I was in high school, I had a history teacher that was extremely kind, and the students loved him. I loved him. And he was very generous with giving the students a lot of room to grow and a lot of grace. And there was a period of time where there was a deadline for a paper that needed to be due at the end of the month. And most of the class got it done. But I went to him and I asked him, you know, the deadline was, you know, say a certain date, and I didn't get my work done, which is probably quite normal. But he gave me mercy. I asked him, I said, you know, teacher, I had a busy week. I had a busy few weeks, and unfortunately, I wasn't able to get this book report in. And I'm just asking, do you think you can give me a little extra time? And this teacher was one of those teachers that he was always merciful, and he would always give you just a little bit of leeway to be able to give you time to be able to get it done, because he wanted you to succeed. So he gave me a little bit, a couple extra days, and I was able to get the report done. Well, another month went by. There was another deadline. And people had caught wind that I received this type of mercy from the teacher, and he got this reputation that, you know, if like you didn't get your work done on that certain day, he would give you mercy. So a few other students, same thing. They were at deadline, didn't get the work done. A few other students went to him and said, hey, teacher, you know, you gave, you know, Justin a little bit of mercy. Do you think you can give us mercy as well? And he goes, you know what? I care about you guys. I want you guys to do good this semester. You guys have 2 extra days and you can get your work done. Well, what do you think happened? Well, the next time we had a deadline and paper had to be turned in, now it wasn't just me, it wasn't just a few other students, but it was a large portion of the class, because they realized, well, you know what? Teacher, he's a great guy. He's really cool. He gives us a lot of, cuts us a lot of slack. He'll give us mercy. Well, the third time around, deadline comes, you're supposed to hand in your paperwork, and guess what happens? Teacher says, where's your work? And we're saying, well, we don't have our work, and don't you think maybe you can just give us a little bit of mercy and give us a few more days? And he goes, this time, no mercy. Schaller, you get an F. You over there, Smith, you get an F. Thompson over there, you get an F. And next thing you know, he's starting to hand out failing grades to all of the students, half of the students that are in the class. And at that point, we start to think to ourselves, wait a second, a couple months ago, he was giving us a little bit of a pass. And a month ago, he gave us a pass. And right now, he's not giving us a pass. That's not fair. There's other people that got a pass, but I'm not getting a pass right now. And we cry out, we say, teacher, that's not fair. And his response is, it is fair, because mercy is not dependent upon you expecting or earning it whatsoever. If you feel like you deserve mercy, or you feel like I'm being unfair and not giving it to you, that's not mercy. Mercy is something that is granted to somebody, not based upon the other person, but based upon the decision that the person has made to give mercy. And so I want to talk just briefly about this part of God's character, and how this really reflects, and we really need to understand this as well, is that justice at the beginning of the school year, when we all signed up for school and our teacher gave us the assignment and told us what the deadline was, we knew what the rules were, and we knew that we had to abide by the rules, and if we didn't, we got a failing grade. But when we didn't have our work done by the end of the, or on the date that we had to turn it in, when our teacher gave us mercy, we didn't deserve it. But it was just out of his own character that he decided to give it to us. Real justice would be that he gave us a failing grade right then and there, the first time around. Second time around, he gave us mercy, but we deserved a second failing grade. And then the third time around, we definitely deserved a failing grade. But when he finally gave us that failing grade, what do we cry out to the teacher, say to the teacher, "Teacher, you're not being fair. You gave it to us before. Why aren't you giving it to us now?" So the justice and mercy of God is something that we need to understand, because if we don't understand the justice of God, we can't understand the mercy of God. So the character of God, Exodus chapter 34, we'll look in Exodus chapter 34, verse 6. In this verse in Exodus chapter 34, this is where Moses is going up to Mount Sinai, and God is going to give Moses the rules of the covenant that the Jews have to follow for them to have Yahweh be their God. And when Moses goes up to Mount Sinai and he talks with God, and God tells Moses who he is and what his character is, this is how God defines himself. By the way, this passage is used over 20 times throughout the Bible. It's a theme that runs out throughout the entirety of the Bible. And in verse 6, it says, "The Lord passed before him, proclaimed, 'The Lord, which is Lord Yahweh, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty.'" So you have the first part of it where it's talking about the character of God in the sense that he's merciful, gracious, slow to anger, abounding steadfast love and faithfulness. We love that aspect of him. Many times you'll talk to people and they'll say, "I like the God of the New Testament, but that God of the Old Testament, I don't like so much." But here's the thing about the character of God. The character of God is not something that is in compartments, where you have on one side the anger or the wrath of God, and then on the other side you have the love of God. They're all connected. So you can't have love if you don't have anger. Example, if I'm a husband and my wife, God forbid, someone steals my wife, I wouldn't love her if I didn't showcase anger towards that action. Or it says in the Old Testament that God is a jealous God. Well, how about this fact that I love my children so much that if they had a relationship and left me behind, I wouldn't love them if I didn't have godly jealousy towards the relationship they have with somebody else. So they're interconnected. So mercy is not something that is separate without justice. You can't have it. If you don't have justice, there's no such thing as mercy. So when people say, "I like the God of the New Testament because he's loving, compassionate, gracious, and forgiving, but the one in the Old Testament, he's wrathful and he's angry, and he's doing actions that don't make sense to me, or I don't believe are just." So this verse is used over and over again throughout the entirety of the Bible because it has both of these elements of God's nature, justice and then mercy. So the second half of it says, verse 7, "keeping steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers of the children and the children's children to the third and fourth generation," meaning that he's going to hold the families that commit the sin, guilty to the third and fourth generation, you go, that seems like it's quite severe. Why would he do that? How about the gracious and slow to anger and the abounding in love? Well, let's just look at a couple examples. So there's two passages that I was thinking of, but I think this one is one that we're all familiar with, and I think it will showcase what I'm trying to explain. So in 2 Samuel chapter 6, this is a story of Uzzah and the ark. And this is one of these examples where God does something, and it's seemingly like God does something abruptly, and we can't wrap our head around why he would do this. So 2 Samuel chapter 6, this is where David is bringing back the ark to Jerusalem. And when they had the ark, this was the throne of God. And God commissioned the Jews specifically to transport the ark in a certain way. And this is an important thing for us to know, that God has a set of rules of who he is. And the Bible describes that as rightness or his righteousness. We all know that when we play a game. Who wants to play a game if there's no boundaries in the sense of what is good and evil or what is right or wrong? You need a goal line to be able to define what a goal is. So in the scripture, that word righteousness is God's character, his attributes of his morality, of what a human being should be and how a human being should approach him because he's holy. So he laid that out to the Jewish people, and he laid it out so specifically that he told the Levites that when they were to take the throne of God and transport it from one location to the next, they had to do it a specific way. And in verse 5, David and all the house of Israel celebrated before the Lord. And they came to the threshing floor, Nacon. Uzzah put out his hand to the ark of God, took hold of it, for the oxen stumbled. So here's a story where you have this man who is transporting. He's a Goethite. He's a Levite, but he's from this sect, Goethites, that they dealt with all of the instruments and all of the different vessels that were in the tabernacle. And one of the rules that a Goethite had as a Levite was that they were never to touch the throne of God. And Uzzah is one of these men who was commissioned, that he knew what the role was as he was called a Levite, that he was to obey God in a very specific way. And if he didn't, there would be a consequence to it. So what is Uzzah doing in verse 6? Well, they're transporting the cart or the ark on a cart. And as they're transporting it, this is a very precious item to the Jews. This is the ark of God, the throne of God. And as they're walking, the oxen stumble a little bit and it shakes the cart to the point that the ark is going to fall off of the cart. So Uzzah's doing something that we would say is like very commendable. He doesn't want the thing to fall off and go into the dirt. So what does he do? He does probably what all of us would do. He stretches out his hand and he basically just pushes the ark back onto the cart so it doesn't fall into the dirt. So Uzzah, we see him as being somewhat of a victim in this story, because if we continue to read in verse 7, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and God struck him down there because of his error. And he died there because beside the ark of God. And what was David's response right away? He's thinking, why would Yahweh strike down a man who's trying to help the ark of God to be transported? Well, I would say there's two answers to this, and this is going to help us, I think, understand the difference between justice and mercy. The first one is this, is that the Jews knew that to transport the Ark of God, it couldn't be on a cart, but it had to be carried on the shoulders of the Levites so that no one would touch it. That's the first one. But they don't obey that, but they rather put the Ark on a cart. I don't know if they're in a rush. They had to get it from one location to the next really quick. They didn't have the poles that would slide through the rings that were on the Ark. Whatever it might be, they had to get this thing moving from one location to the next, and they put it on a cart. So that was the first one. The second one, which I think is reflective of what Uzzah was assuming, was this, that Uzzah felt as though that the dirt was dirtier than his own hands. Meaning that he was saving the ark from falling into the dirt, and he felt as though that the dirt would defile the ark. But he didn't think that his hand was as bad as the dirt. But the interesting thing is in Romans chapter 8, it says the dirt is doing exactly what the dirt was created to do, to glorify God. It's obeying God. The creation's obeying God. The dirt is the dirt, and God created the dirt to do what the dirt is supposed to do. But here you have a Levite man who's not doing what he's supposed to do, but he's assuming that his hands are less dirty than the dirt. So what happens? God strikes him down and he dies. And you read that story and human beings were trying to figure out, how is this Yahweh, this God, how would he do something like that? How would he be a God that would tell Joshua to go into the promised land and to wipe out all of the inhabitants or the tribal people that were in the land? That's genocide. Or how is it that the two priests that went in and offered strange fire, God struck them down right there? Well, David's thinking the same thing. So in verse 8, David was angry because the Lord had broken out against Uzzah, and that place is Perez Uzzah to this day. And David, here's the point, David was afraid of the Lord that day. Now, this is something for us to know about who God is. Back in the 17th century, there was revival that was in the United States, 18th century, and a lot of the preaching in that day was kind of fire and brimstone. It was that God is really good and man is really bad, therefore God is really mad. And they had an understanding of their own sinfulness. But as we have turned through the years in the 20th century, it was more pronounced that we took more of the graciousness and loving kindness of God, and we portrayed that aspect of God. But here's the thing. You can't have the graciousness and loving kindness of God if we don't understand who God is. We have to understand who we're dealing with. We've turned God into a teddy bear. Just like when I was a student with my teacher, when my teacher was giving me mercy, 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 and then I was calling him by his first name, and I didn't have a level of respect because I just felt as though that he was just going to always give me what I wanted. I took advantage and thought mercy was a right that I had, until he brought justice in and said, no, you get a failing grade because you know the requirements of what it means to be a student. If you don't hand it in, you get an F. In Romans chapter 1, sinners are not afraid of the judgment of God. And here's the reason why. Because if I live on this planet for 50 years and nothing's happened to me yet, and I've sinned for 50 straight years, judgment doesn't seem like it's ever going to come. But here's the thing. In Genesis 3, when Adam and Eve fell, this is what God told them before they fell. If you eat of the fruit of this tree, you will surely die. Die when? Die that day. Now, spiritually die, yes. They spiritually died. But how about this? When you eat of that tree and you make that decision, you will biologically die that day. But what did God give them? Did he give them 900 years to live? So nothing's changed. So we're born into this world not understanding the holiness of God and not understanding the sin that is in us. And not understanding that when we sin, we're sinning against a holy, righteous God one day, 1 month, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years. But there's no judgment that's been poured out on us because of his long suffering and his mercy that is always leading us to a place to recognize how holy he is and how sinful we are. So the real question is, when I look at the Old Testament and I read these stories of these people that are sinners, my question is, why didn't God strike them down in the moment they committed the sin? Is a better question. And so David has this understanding, what's wrong with Uzzah? And God is saying, I am giving you an example that all of you who commit one infraction should die right on the spot. But since I'm so merciful and gracious, and I'm so kind and so long-suffering, my mercy is being poured out on you so that you could be drawn to a place that you realize you need repentance. And in John chapter 8, just look at this just in closing. John 8, the story that is so well known. But I just want to show you just one part of the story. This is John 8, woman caught in adultery. Jesus is there teaching. And the religious Pharisees, they bring the woman. Now, the thing about this woman is that she's caught in the act of adultery, meaning that she is caught in the actual act, meaning that they took her from a bed with a man. So we don't know if she's half naked, if she's fully naked, if she was able to get any clothing on. But she's taken from the very place of the act of sin, dragged through the streets, and she's placed in front of all of these people. And then there's Jesus there. And they ask Jesus a very interesting question to try to catch him. In verse 4, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery," the very act. Think about how much shame that would bring. "Now, in the law of Moses, it commanded us to stone such a woman." Do you know that, and this might sound severe, but I think it's good for us to know. Do you know that there's 30 different ways you could receive capital punishment in the Old Testament? If you were in the Old Testament, if you were unruly in public against your parents, that was deserving for a child to receive capital punishment. That is severe. Now we have a woman who's caught in the act, and what does Moses say? She should be stoned. So the reason why they did that is because if Jesus is going to be claiming to be just, justice would be served by this woman receiving capital punishment. So they're trying to catch him. So are we going to have a stoning? Verse 6, they said this to test him, that they might have some charge to bring against him. So Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. And as they continued to ask him, he stood up and he said to him, "Let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her." And once more he bent down and he wrote on the ground. But when they heard it, they went away one by one, beginning with the older ones, and Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Now, Jesus gives them the right. If you have no sin, you can commit the judgment and bring justice upon this woman. None of them are claiming to be perfect. Therefore, they drop their stones. Here's the point of the story. Jesus never says that she shouldn't be stoned. He doesn't say that. He doesn't defend her and say she shouldn't. He's not agreeing that this is something that is unjust. But in verse 10, Jesus stood up and said to her, and the amazing thing is, the only one that had the ability to bring justice on a sinful woman, which was right. If Jesus decided to pick up a stone and stone this woman, he would be doing it in righteousness and he would be just to do it. He's the only one that has the ability to do this. and he's still standing there. So the question is not, should she be stoned? The question is, what is Jesus going to do to put judgment out on this woman? So he stood up and said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" That is not a imperative statement. That is him asking her, "Has no one condemned you?" Because there's one person standing in front of you right now that can condemn you. One person. And that's Christ. She said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said, "Neither," here's his sentence, "neither do I condemn you." How does he have the right to be able to do that? Well, he just set the grounds. And you know what the grounds were? Anyone who has no sin can throw a stone at her. And I'm the only one who can throw the stone. But since I am in a place that I can decide in myself to show mercy. This isn't something that if Jesus stoned this woman, we wouldn't be saying that's unfair. Because God set the guidelines at the beginning. And what were the guidelines? If you eat of the tree, on that day you will die. On that day. The only reason Adam lived for centuries was because the mercy of God and the long suffering of God was given to him. That's the only reason. So when we see Uzzah touch the ark, Uzzah knew what the arrangement was, that God was holy, he was unholy, and he was told by God, not in any circumstance can you touch it. But he assumed, and that's the problem with us as sinners, we assume something about who God is, and we say something like this, "The big man upstairs, when he really knows what my true motives are, he'll forgive me." Well, guess what? He already knows what your true motives are, and he's going to hold that against you in the day of judgment. But he's given you this opportunity in life that every single year that goes by is a year that is mercy that's been given to you so that you can come in right relationship with Christ and meet Christ, because he is the only one that can give mercy. He's the only one that can give grace. And with this woman, he's the only one that can say, "Neither I condemn you. Go, and from now on, sin no more." What's he saying to her? He's saying that I've given you saving mercy. And the only reason, and here's the last point, the only reason Jesus Christ is the one that can give mercy to this woman is because he's the one who's going to take the stone for her. That's where the justice of God and the mercy of God is showcased on the cross, where Christ was able to forgive sins. Because he wasn't saying, "Oh, I'm just going to let it slide, I'm going to let it go." But rather, he is saying, God holds every sin, and if he lets any of it slide, he's unjust. But Jesus said, "I'm the only one that can take that sin and bring it to the cross so justice is served, but still pour out mercy to you." And that's what he did with this woman. And it's important, just in closing, that the day and age that we live in, people are so flippant about the holiness of God because they don't understand. The most important thing in our life, I would say this, the most important thing in our life, in every aspect of it, is that we have a proper view of who God is and the totality of his attributes and character. And we can't pick out the aspects that we like and leave out the aspects that make us feel uncomfortable, because they're all connected. I can't say to my wife, "I love you," and then my action shows something completely different. I should get angry about something that breaks that relationship of love or doesn't represent the love that I have or she has for me. And so God is the same way. So we need to understand the holiness of God, and that God is only holy because he's righteous. If he's righteous, he must be just. And if he's just, he holds every man's sin and holds every man accountable under that sin. But he also has this other aspect of mercy and grace that he's decided in himself. If he sent all of us to hell today. He would not be unjust. He would be perfectly just. And Romans 2 says that none of us would have any excuse to say before a righteous God. But in himself, he's decided. Mercy is not a right that we have. Mercy is something that is given to us because that is his nature and his character. And he says, Peter says that he's willing, God is not wanting that any man should perish, but that every man should come to this understanding that God is merciful and gracious to anyone who realizes that they need it and comes to God and asks for it. And if we do that, we receive it. And that grace and that mercy is so much greater when we have an understanding of who God is in his holiness and then who we are as sinners. But how great is that grace when we receive it? And it does, our testimony becomes that I was lost, that I was a rebel, that I turned my back on him, but his grace, great grace, found me, changed me, and now I'm in a right relationship with God. So thank you for tuning in, and God bless you, and have a great day.